Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Graham Rutherford and I'm an alcoholic. For those that care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Thanks everybody and welcome to the supper and a speaker meeting in July. It's already July, how did that happen? Anyway, we're glad that you're all here. We've got a speaker here tonight. You've already had the supper, now we're gonna have the speaker. If you didn't get any food, the table's still heaving with desserts, so please feel free after the meeting to help yourself. The Simple Actions group, which is putting on this event, wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms across the hall. Please don't go upstairs or run around the church inside. Okay, you can run around outside if you want, but not inside. Thank you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Remember, the person next to you might be listening. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. And I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And I must say I'm tremendously excited this evening, more excited than usual, if that's possible. Tonight we've got a wonderful speaker who my friend Eric in Richmond recommended, and it's Nathan, and him and his friend Don drove a long way to be here today. They set out at lunchtime and have been driving since then really to get here for us. So I'm not going to take up any more of his time. Sit back, relax, enjoy the speaker. And it's Nathan from DC. Thank you.
That's good. All right. My name's Nathan. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank everybody for having me out here today. Also, I'm very honored that I was asked to come and give a talk for Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember a time where I felt that Alcoholics Anonymous, prison, nobody was going to ask me to do anything because I wasn't offering very much at one time. And I can assure you the person that's standing in front of you today is a direct result from a higher power working in my life and working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous on a daily basis. I have a sobriety date, which is April 20th of 2010. I have a sponsor. I think you broke it. I'm glad it wasn't me. It's okay. It's minor. This is just a situation, which I found. There are no more problems in my life today. We only have situations. With God and a sponsor, I can go through anything. So I'm here to tell you in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And I'll get right into it. I grew up in a in Rappahannock County, which is over in the Blue Ridge Mountains. We grew up about 15 minutes from Old Rag Mountain. I don't know if anybody's ever heard Old Rag. It's a wonderful place to raise a family. We grew up on a farm, small little farm. There was five kids, mom, dad, and grandma living in a big white house, trying to learn how to live. My mom and dad worked very hard to make sure we always got what we needed. We didn't always get what we wanted, but we always got what we needed. I like to say that we were raised with an iron fist. You know, they brought us up with good manners. They taught us how to act in public. They taught us how to speak when spoken to. Yes, sir, no, sir. Yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. All very, very good morals to try and instill in children. I wish that was still happening these days, because some of the younger guys that I run into every now and again, they definitely weren't brought up that way. That's just an opinion. That's my opinion. You know, some of it's probably not the best all the time. So moving right along, growing up was pretty standard. I remember being a kid, and the only thing that I can really distinctively remember is getting out of school. All I wanted to do was get out of school so I could go home, go out in the woods, go down to the pond, go find something to get in trouble. So that's basically my childhood. You know, I'll go to school because I have to. I do remember trying to get out of school, and I had some pretty tricky tricks to getting out of school, which worked sometimes, sometimes they didn't. I remember one time I tried to figure out how many blankets I could put on to raise my fever up. So when I told my mom I was sick and she checked my temperature, I could get out of school. Well, it didn't work. It didn't work at all. But it was a good idea. So going into high school, I took my first drink. I discovered alcohol between the summer of 7th and 8th grade. I was at my buddy's house, and we'd been doing some chores at his place, and we were in the building, and he pulled out this mason jar, this clear liquid, and it was glistening, it looked really cold, and he asked me if I'd ever gotten drunk before. And to that time, I can honestly say I'd never been interested in alcohol. I'd never been interested in getting drunk. I never fantasized about it. I never planned it. I never plotted it. But for some reason or another, when the opportunity arose, so did the desire. And I said, nope, but why not, right? And so we got good and drunk that night. It was a little mason jar of blackberry moonshine. And the next morning when I woke up, all the things that I'd been told growing up that was going to happen didn't happen. You know, nobody died. Nobody went to jail. I wasn't sick. I woke up feeling better than I did the night before. And I had an excellent time. I had a very excellent time. So why don't we do this again next weekend? And sure enough, every weekend I look forward to going to my buddy John's house. Going into eighth grade, we started plotting on how to, start catching a buzz before we went to class. I thought that was a grand idea. I worked but for so long. A buddy of mine ended up drinking way too much and throwing up all over English class. And that came to a screeching halt. No more drinking in school. So just leave school. We'll leave school and go get trashed. Now, I can honestly say at the time I couldn't tell you what alcohol was doing for me. I couldn't tell you how alcohol was allowing me to show up for my life. Alcohol did for me the things I couldn't do for myself. It allowed me to show up in a crowd of people and feel a part of. It allowed me to walk down the hallway and not feel less than or more than. It put me right eye to eye with whoever I was going up against. And at the time, I couldn't tell you that when I wasn't drunk or under the influence of something, that this knot in my gut, this hole in my soul, was the malady that I suffer. You know, I have suffered from a spiritual malady, and alcohol was my fix, man. Alcohol worked all the way right up to the end. It shut those voices up. It calmed me down. It warmed me up, and allowed me to show up for my life for a long time. And I chased that. I chased that feeling. I chased that sense of ease and comfort that came pretty much right away from taking that first drink. Up until the bitter end. And I was willing to walk away from wonderful thing after wonderful thing, push everyone that loved me in my life away from me. walk away from opportunity after opportunity to get brother alcohol. Because if alcohol did for you what it did for me, nothing else mattered, you know? Scholarships didn't matter. College didn't matter. Going to school didn't matter. You know, it just didn't matter. And I was willing to do whatever I needed to do to get what I, to get to brother alcohol. And things were going pretty great, you know? High school was awesome. I played soccer. I was a soccer player from the time I could kick a ball, and I still kick a ball every now and again. I played on the varsity soccer team. I'm a very talented young man, but that's what other people were telling me. Nathan, you got so much potential. Nathan, you got so much going for you. But I was told not too long ago what when somebody tells you that actually means. When somebody's telling you you got potential, all that means is you ain't done shit yet. And that's true. That's, I mean, part of my language, but it's the best way to put it. You know? I didn't know. I was like, well, they think I'm going somewhere. Well, I was, you know, sitting on the porch pipe dreaming. I'm going to be a soccer star one day. I'm going to be an astronaut. Or tipping back that beer. And didn't really get anywhere. But like I said, I did accomplish a lot of things in high school. You know, anything I put my mind to, I excelled at. Anything that I actually took the time to put effort into, I was pretty good at. But on the inside, I had this thing constantly telling me, you're not good enough. I had this thing on the inside telling me that you're never going to fit in. You're never going to achieve all these things that you want to achieve. This constant governor of what I could possibly achieve is this spiritual malady. It's this hole in my soul that I can't fill up with nothing but, you know, a fifth of Jim Beam. Or there towards the end, Aristocrat Vodka. Or Steel Reserve. That worked really good. But that's a sidetrack. So, my senior year, I had gotten involved into some pretty heavy things. I was hanging out with some pretty not so good people. And I was living a double life. You know, I had to develop two different personalities. What my parents saw, what my teachers saw, you know, I had to put on this facade that I was a good kid with a lot of potential, right? On the other hand, I was lying to my family, I was lying to my loved ones, and telling them I was going somewhere, but really I was going down the road with some buddies to partake in some, you know, get some drugs or go get drunk or just do whatever we wanted to. And so my senior year was a tough year. You know, we buried buddies all year long, it seemed like. Two of my friends were killed in alcohol and drug-related car accidents. Another one of my friends, a gun went off and took his life with it. And another one of my friends, which hit home the most, I grew up with him, we were in 4-H together. He was a great guy, awesome, awesome person. And he was addicted to heroin really bad. And he lost his life to this disease. He went home one day, wrote a letter, went out in the woods with a shotgun, and he took his life. And I was at the family night, and I saw this devastation that came from this. And for a brief moment, I realized that what I was doing wasn't cool anymore. What I was doing wasn't right. And like I said, it was just a brief moment. The very next moment was, well, we got to get good and drunk tonight to push this down. You know, we got to celebrate his life by getting good and drunk tonight. And that's how I dealt with things. It's the other thing alcohol did with me. It allowed me to deal with good things. It allowed me to deal with bad things. It allowed me to deal with the rain. It allowed me to deal with the snow. It allowed me to deal with the sunshine. It allowed me to deal with getting up and just going outside, whatever the weather was. And so, like I said, my senior year was tough. And in December, something really bad happened. And it was time for me to stop drinking and stop doing drugs. And my little brother is my best friend. He was my best friend in the whole wide world. You know, we did everything together. We grew up together. We chased girls together. We cut ourselves, we know, not like cut ourselves, but you know, like bumps and screw and bruises and stuff. And he told me, you know, he said, Nate, you know, you need to lay off what you're doing. And so I took his advice. And for the next 30 days, I didn't take a drink of alcohol. And for the next 30, you know, that first week was good. You know, I was feeling good. You know, that chemicals leaving my body. You know, I was starting to get a little color. My cheeks are puffing out a little bit. The girls are noticing me again. People are saying, Nate, you're looking great. Whatever you're doing, you're looking great. Then the next couple days, you know, things start, the knot starts tightening up, you know. Sounds are louder, you know. Annoying people are more annoying. you stub your foot and the end of the world is coming, you know. It's that irritableness, that restlessness, and that discontentedness that the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous describes so well that started creeping up on me. You know, I didn't have Brother Alcohol filling that hole anymore. You know, and I definitely wasn't filling it with a spiritual solution, because I didn't have a clue. I didn't have any idea what was wrong with me. My parents were saying, "What the hell is wrong with you, Nathan? What's going on?" And at the time, I couldn't tell them. You know, I'm suffering from a spiritual malady that can only be fixed with a 12-step program and God coming in my life. I didn't have those words. You know, I was just like, "I don't know what's wrong, Mom. I'm just freaking out. You know, I'm just angry. Leave me alone, teenager." You know, we played the teenager card. So in December of 2003, on the 30th, we got invited to a party. And we go to this party, me and my little brother, and we both end up getting drunk. On the way home, I fell asleep. And we veered off the road, and we hit a tree head on. And it killed my little brother instantly, and it dang near killed me. They cut me out of the car and flew me to Fairfax. And they spent 30 days in the hospital recovering from the injuries sustained in that accident. And when I woke up in the hospital, my mom told me what had happened. And for the next 27 days, I would lie in that hospital bed trying to figure out how I was going to go the rest of my life with the knowledge that I was driving the car that took my little brother's life. How was I going to look my mother and father in the eye because I took their son, their baby boy, from them? How was I going to get up and face this world? How do you even fathom something like that? Well, I'll tell you how. You stay under the influence of drugs and alcohol. Brother Alcohol showed up every time. Brother Alcohol took that big hurt away and pushed it down and allowed me to live for another 6 years. Because I firmly believe without alcohol, I would have blown my brains out a long time ago. Because I had already had trouble living in my own skin. I had already had trouble facing this life on life's terms. I had no idea how to navigate this world. I had no tools. I had no solution. And I had no idea how I was going to attain the knowledge that it took to get up on a daily basis and face whatever came down the pipe. The only knowledge that I had was to get up, pinch together as many pennies as I could to go down the road and get a 40-ounce of Steel Reserve, choke that one down, throw it up sometimes just to get the second one down so I could face the day. And for 6 years, like I said, good things came. Good thing, you know, God has worked. God is constant in my life. My higher power is constant. Every day He is a loving, strong, driving force in my life. The only thing that varies is me and my decision on whether or not I'm going to allow Him into my life and work on a daily basis. And the only place I learned how to do that was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and working with a sponsor and working with loving friends that were also working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was the only way that I was able to learn how to navigate what I'm talking about. Well, for 6 years, I had no idea how to do that. I had no idea how I was going to get to the other side. I had no idea there was a real other side to what I was dealing with. I was introduced in Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 18 years old. My father, who is here tonight, he's my friend, and he is a grand example of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and what the 12-step program can do. On a daily basis, he did everything he could to try and carry the message to me. But, you know, he says it best, you know, you can't rob a drunk of his education. And I had a lot of learning to do. I had a lot of learning to do. I had to hit my head more times than many. And how he was able to stand back and watch his son slowly kill himself on a daily basis, I will never know. Other than God and 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous working in his life. But like as I said, I was introduced to AA when I was 18. And we went to a retreat. My first AA meeting was at a retreat. And it was an excellent weekend. I was not sober, but it was still excellent. Just keep coming back, right? That's what it is. You're going to be all right, kid, as long as you don't die before the next meeting. And I you know, I would hear these old guys, these older guys talk about living life on life's terms, talk about the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. At the time, I could not fathom what they were talking about. I had no idea how to get what they were talking about because I was not ready. I was not willing, as only the dying can be. It talks about in at the very end. My favorite reading is at the very end of the first step in the 12 and 12. It's like, who dares to be rigorously honest? Who wants to? I'm going to screw it up, so I'm not even going to try. But if you read it, you got it. And people that do this are only people who are as willing as the dying can be. And at the time, I just wasn't dying, I guess. I was not ready. I did not have enough education to get what you guys were offering in this program. So for 5 years, I bounced in and out, flopping around on the tables, you know, mumbling and screaming, my life sucks, I'm miserable, and I don't know how you guys are saying it's over, and you guys seem so happy. I just don't know how to do this. Well, I wasn't willing to do anything. I'm a firm believer that this is an action program. You get what you get. You get out of Alcoholics Anonymous what you put into Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just like a friendship. The only way to get a friend is to be a friend. The only way to have love is to love. And it's an action program. I firmly believe that this is an action program. And I definitely wasn't taking many actions for a long time. And so, but every time, I tell you, I've done a couple days in jail, and there are two things. There's one thing that Alcoholics Anonymous and jail have in common, and they are this. Every time you go back, you see the same people. And they're working it well. They're doing a great job at it. You know, your crooks are doing great, so they're in jail. Your old-timers are old-timers because they continue to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and try and carry this message to another sick and suffering alcoholic. They stick to their primary purpose, which is to stay sober and help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. Well, the crooks, they stick to their primary purpose, which is, I'm number one. I got to get mine. And sure enough, they get theirs. They get all 15 years or 4 years or whatever. That's a sidetrack. But anyways, so I had a wild ride. I had a wild ride for about 5 years. I experienced a lot of really crazy stuff. I lived in a teepee for a little while. I hitchhiked from Pinedale, Wyoming to Bozeman, Montana through what's that national park? Yellowstone. The Tetons is great too. I had a lot of fun in the Tetons, but that's another story. There's a lot of drunkalogs. There's a lot of great times. But the best way to sum up my drinking is at the very end, I was drinking daily. I was doing everything I could to stay drunk constantly, and there's a series of lines that I had crossed. I remember a while ago, a long time ago, I was drinking a bottle of wine right out of the bottle. Who needs a cup, right? And my dad said, "Boy, you're going to wake up one day and you're going to need that stuff." I said, "Nah, man, I got this." And I turned it up and I took me an arrogant swig and I put the bottle down. Well, one day I woke up and I needed it. And that's the day I crossed the line where it came from just drinking because I wanted to drink because I had to. I don't know what day that was. I don't know why that was. But I woke up one morning and I needed a drink. Because I had realized what alcohol was doing for me. I started drinking on a daily basis, not because I killed my little brother in a car accident. I started drinking on a daily basis because I couldn't live with myself anymore. I couldn't deal with the voices. I couldn't deal with the hideous four horsemen jumping on my bed every morning that I woke up. I know what they are, but I can't think of them off my head right now. I don't know why I was screwed up. Four horsemen. What is it? Terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. They were my best friends for a long time. And it was this impending doom that I was unable to escape until I took that first drink. The sense of ease and comfort. Man, he describes that so well. That's the other crazy thing. I started reading the big book, and when I started hearing the big book, I started realizing this guy knows what he's talking about. You know, 72 years ago, whenever he wrote it, a long time ago, he used a different dictionary back then. That's how long ago it was. But he talked about exactly how I felt. And the way he described alcoholism to me was exactly how I was feeling at the time. And boy, when that hit me, it was the light bulb came on. You know, you never know when the light bulb comes on, and it came on that day. So I'm sitting in my house one day, and I'd crossed that first line, and about the last 6 months of my drinking, I pushed everybody in my life out of my life except my father and my grandmother. Everybody that loved me and everybody that cared about me didn't want nothing to do with me no more. I had a little wild girlfriend, but she was as sick as I was. She was a lot of fun, but she was as sick as I was. And didn't do me much good. But that last 6 months, I stepped over a line, the last line. I decided that there was no way in this world that I was ever going to stop drinking. There's no way in this world I was ever going to be able to face the fact that I killed my little brother in a car accident. There's no way in this world that I was ever going to be able to deal with that shame and that guilt and that despair that came with all the things that I continued to do. You know, I wasn't worried about jail. I wasn't worried about prison. I wasn't worried about cops. I wasn't worried about any of the consequences that was happening as a result of my drinking. Alcohol did for me things that outweighed that stuff. You just can't weigh it, the difference. What alcohol did for me, just nothing else. It didn't matter what I had. The consequences, that's cool, as long as I can get drunk. And so I crossed that line. I was going to drink myself to death. There was no way I was going to be able to stop drinking. You just need to leave me alone. I'm going to drink myself to death. I'll see you later. I love you, and I'm sorry. That's about all that I could muster. Well, I tell you, I think my higher power had other plans. I know he did, actually. Because as I said, he's constant. He's constant in my life. He's a loving and guiding force in my life on a daily basis, whether I like it or not. It's if I choose to view what he's given me. Well, I remember one day I was going to court on an assault and battery charge, and I decided that I needed a couple bottles of wine before I went to court to kind of knock the edge off of things. And we go to get to court about 9 a.m. I go into the courtroom, puffed up, arrogant, loving life, and the bailiff had asked me if I had been drinking. And I said, no. But have you been drinking? You've been drinking this morning? And I turned around and walked right up in the courtroom like I owned the place. I was a lippy, mouthy, like I said, the person that's standing in front of you today is not the person that I used to be. Thank God. Well, they didn't like it too much, and they pulled me in the bullpen and gave me a breathalyzer, and they carted me off to jail. And I spent 14 days in jail. And I get this bond hearing, and I go before the judge, I go before God, I go before my father, and I swear to God, my father, and the judge, that I learned my lesson. These 14 days have really got me straightened out. I'm gonna go back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm really gonna give life a fair shot, Judge. You just let me go. I'll be fine. Cause I did not like sitting in jail. I'm an active guy. And more than anything, I didn't have my fix. I couldn't shut up that voice in my head. I couldn't shut it up. I just toss and turn and think and think and think. Well, so they give me this bond on some strict stipulations. Refrain from alcohol, go to you gotta go pre-court stuff, and behave yourself. All I do is behave myself. And for 2 days that worked. Behaved myself for two whole days, and then I found myself into someone else's house and taken there. I thought I was a classy drinker, right? It's hard to be a classy drinker when you're drinking top shelf liquor from your neighbor's house. You know, there's not much class in that. When you steal his top shelf liquor and you got your pinky up drinking it, that's not very classy. But I thought I was. I thought I had it all figured out. So I drink way too much, and I had some rolling blackouts. I did. There's some parts of my life that are missing because of my blackouts. And there's things that I will never, you know, how I ended up in the places I ended up. I don't know how I got there, but it sure seemed like a good trip. You know, some. But this particular blackout, I wish I could take back. I woke up the next morning, two sheriff's deputies banging on my door. Mr. Corbin, you got to come with us. All right. So they cart me off to jail, and they gave me 4 felonies and a misdemeanor. I said, "Mr. Corbin, you've really done it this time. Does it look like that? I have done it this time. And they basically threw me in jail, and we're going to throw away the key. And for 3 months, I sat in that jail cell. My father would come and visit me, and he did everything he could for me to keep my mouth shut. And he had there's another guy in that that area from his home group that would bring the message of Alcoholics Anonymous into that jail. And every Thursday I'd go and I'd sit in that little box, and we would talk about AA. And for 3 months I would toss and I would turn in that jail cell, thinking about all the things that I could have done differently. Thinking about all the times that I'd spit on my little brother's death. All the times that I had spit in my parents' face. The person that I had become was not the person that my parents had raised me to be. And there was no reason, but there was no reason for me to have been in the place that I was in. I had every opportunity in the world to go a different way. I had a loving mother and father. I had a loving family. I had the support and kind and care from everybody in my county willing to help me get through this terrible time. There was no good reason that I was sitting in that jail cell that night or that stint of time. There's no reason I could come up with. So I would toss and turn, and I was a little foggy. I know I'd been drinking for quite some time. And it took about 3 months for the fog to start lifting. And I got this opportunity to go up to this program at the Salvation Army in Alexandria, Virginia. And my grand idea was I'm going to go up there, and I'm going to skip shop. I'm going to move to Wyoming. I'm going to disappear, because I am not going to the penitentiary. Not that I didn't want to go. Of course I didn't want to go, but not that I was afraid to go. It's just I wasn't going to go. Well, I got there, and for the first time in my life, I saw that this is where I was going to learn how to live again. I realized there's a moment of clarity, like it talks about in our big book. A moment of clarity that this is where I was going to get the help that I needed so desperately. I had no idea how desperate I was. I had no idea how broken I actually was. I was just a dumb kid wandering around this world bouncing off stuff. I had no idea. I thought I had it all figured out. So for 5 months, I was at the Salvation Army awaiting sentences in the circuit court. And while I was there, they taught me how to live again. Tie my shoes, make my bed, iron my clothes, show up on time, listen to rules. There's a strict program up there, but I needed it. I needed every bit of it. And like I said, they taught me how to live again. And then I went to sentencing, and the judge gave me 10 years and suspended all but 18 months to serve in the state penitentiary, put me in handcuffs, and carted me off. I did my time. And during the last 2 months, I was while I was at the Salvation Army, I'm bouncing around a little bit. While I was at the Salvation Army, another wonderful example of what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is, I wanted to go to some AA meetings. And so I called 2 people up in that area, and one guy called me back, and he came and he picked me up at the Salvation Army. And when I got in the car, he didn't ask me why I was there. He didn't ask me what I was doing. He just said, "Hey, my name's Noah. I'm gonna be happy. We'll go to a meeting." And on the way there, I decided I was gonna tell him, I was just gonna dump on him because I needed to talk to somebody about what was going on. And I told him not all the terrible things. I told him what had gotten me in trouble at that time. And he didn't judge me. He didn't think less of me. He didn't react. There was no reaction. It was just love and kindness and him doing for me what was so freely given to him. Passing it on. Him practicing, stay sober and help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. And he introduced me to to a meeting, which is in a series of meetings of my home group now, the Midtown group, which meets every Sunday night from 7:30 to 9 at a high school in Maryland. I wish I knew the name of it right now. But so he left it. He planted a seed. When I left there, when I got locked up, I never showed back up. And I couldn't call him because that PayPal, the Paytel stuff, You can't call people. But he planted a seed. And I said to myself, this is where I'm going to get sober. This is where I'm going to stay sober. And he actually wrote me a letter while I was incarcerated. And he left a good taste in my mouth of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I'm very grateful for. And I hope that one day I can do the same for another sick and dying young man. But so I did my time in the last 2 months of my sentence. I made this work release program, and me without a program, me without running ideas by somebody, me without working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I start getting this, that ego starts rebuilding, that I got some good ideas start coming back, I got this figured out, nothing to keep me humble, right? Nothing to keep me down to this level. I start coming up with stuff, So me and a buddy decide we're going to start selling marijuana while we're low-jacked. We got ankle bracelets on, and the eye in the sky was watching us, and we were doing big things. I was going to pay off my restitution real fast, and we thought we had them fooled, but not at all. We got caught. And it wasn't my fault, though. He was the dummy. I was just with him. No, I had every bit of a part of that. So I ended up, there was a lot more trouble that came with that. But by the grace of God, I didn't end up getting in as much trouble as I should have. If I had gotten what I deserved, they'd put me under the jail. And that's a fact. If I had gotten everything that I deserved for the things that I've done in my life, I would not be standing in front of you today. I would not have gotten a phone call 2 months ago asking to come down here and bring a message to this great group down here in Norfolk, Virginia. But God has other plans. Like I said, God is constant in my life. And sure enough, I got out of jail. And like I said, these consequences don't outweigh what alcohol does for me. So I got out of jail at 12:30 a.m. And that morning at 6 a.m., I'm drinking tequila out of the bottle and going to feed the pigs. And that scared the heck out of me because I had felt the other side. For a long time I could hold on to this. I don't think there's another way. I don't think I got a shot. I can't get what you guys are offering because I got no idea how to get there. I was stuck in this vicious cycle, I could not break that cycle. Well, thank God I was physically separated from alcohol long enough for that cycle to be broken. And I had felt a little bit of peace. I had felt a little bit of okayness, even though while I was in jail. Talking to the guy that was coming in every week, I felt a little bit of what's offered here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then getting drunk that morning lit a fire in me that scared me just about out of my pants. And I said, I got to get out of Dodge. So I moved up to Fairfax, Virginia with nothing but hope. And there's another gentleman that I met while I was at the Salvation Army who was in a program. Fine example of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the examples that it has produced have saved my life. Starting with my father, the people that my father knew. It's just a chain. Everywhere you go, you have a big, big happy family with their arms wide open, just willing to catch you and hold you until you figure out how to get your feet about you. And so I'm up here in Fairfax and I call this gentleman and I say to him, hey man, I'm a liar, I'm a cheat, I'm a thief, I don't know nothing about living. The only thing I know how to do is drink and ruin my life. I said, I'll do whatever it takes to stay sober. I'll do whatever it takes to get what you have. Even if that means setting my tail on fire and running backwards down 495. If you tell me that's going to keep me sober, I'm going to do it. And I became as willing as only the dying can be. I wanted what you had so bad. And I knew how to get it. It's an action program. You dive into the steps, you get a sponsor, and you turn your will and your life over to the care of God. As I understood him, my higher power. So we started working the steps. We started going through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got through the fourth step, and I did my fifth step, and I kind of leveled out. That ego started rebuilding. I started getting some things. That the little suitcase of clothes had become more clothes. I had some different shoes. I had some friends. I had a girlfriend. You know, they weren't carting me off to jail every other week. I mean, there was some great things happening in my life. And I started drifting again, you know. God was no longer number one, you know. Other things started working their way back in, and I decided that one day I was going to get stoned. I got stoned, and it scared me again, and I couldn't tell you guys. I couldn't come back, and I couldn't be honest with you people, because that you guys were going to run me off with sticks and stakes, and you didn't want me around anymore, and I was all this ego that I had built up, and this fear had built up, had separated me from you. And at the time, I didn't know it. I thought it's just marijuana. Alcohol's my vice, you know. But really, what it was a crutch. It separated me from my fellows, you know, complete abstinence. But I was holding on to that, you know. Alcohol's my vice, you know. As long as I'm not drinking, I'm good. And I lied to you people for a year. And I got to a point where I got so sick, and I hadn't done any growing. I hadn't done any action for a year, that I had almost become debilitated with self. And I couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't take it anymore. Because it was all, I couldn't talk to people, I couldn't feel a part of, I couldn't bring the message to another sick and suffering alcoholic, because I wasn't being honest myself. Because I wasn't working a true program of action. How am I supposed to tell some new guy, who's coming in off the streets, hey, you can't smoke marijuana, you can't drink, you can't do nothing, but I know a different way and how to do that. I can't do that if I'm holding on to this secret, harboring this secret in line. There's no way that God can work through me into this person when I've got that void. So I had to get honest. I got honest, and sure enough, they didn't run me off with pitchforks. They didn't run me off with sticks, and they didn't shun me. They didn't make fun of me. They opened their arms to me once again and say, just come on in, we love you, sit down, and we'll have ourselves an AA meeting. And that's when the real started happening. That's when the meat and potatoes started kicking in, you know, because I had no more secrets. I had nothing was separating me from you anymore. God could come in fully. And sure enough, I started working the steps again and playing a rigorous action. You know, step one, I realized I was alcoholic, powerless over alcohol. Step two, definitely God can restore me to sanity, because He had before. He had shut those voices up. He had given me a peace inside me that only can be described by people who have felt it before, or by people that have drank alcohol before, and alcohol did for them what it does for me. I had found a sufficient substitute to the way I was living. I had found a sufficient substitute to turning that bottle up every morning. And that was getting up and hitting my knees and asking God into my life. I'd done an honest and thorough four-step and gone over it with my sponsor. And I became willing to look at myself in a way I'd never been willing to look at myself before. You know, I look at all these character defects, how scared I really am, you know. I'm pretty, but I'm scared, you know. I am a scared, scared young man. And I'm not going to tell you that, you know. That new guy, mean mug, I held on that for a while. Leave me alone. I'm tough. But really, I was just scared to death. Just scared to death of what you might think of me. You might make me better. You might allow me to be your friend. I might have to call you. You might find out who I really am. That was the biggest thing, is you finding out who I really am. Which is just a run-of-the-mill alcoholic. I'm not as cute and unique as I like to think I am. And it's really hard getting people to realize how great I am. I don't know if y'all have that problem, me too. But and I'm still trying. So if y'all got any advice, I'm willing. But So, you know, I started looking at these character defects. And I go to my sponsor one day and I say, hey, man, I'd like to do my 8-step. He said, nah, you got to give it some time, Nathan. You lied to your family and hurt your family for a long time. You broke their hearts for a really long time. Those other people you tell me about in your 4-step, you hurt them in a way that only time can help heal. You going back to these people, it's just another empty promise to them. You need to stay sober, and you need to go back a different person. You need to go back with sufficient evidence that you are not the same cat that hurt you for so long. You need to allow God to do something with that mess that you are, basically. He says so. He's so ginger. He was so loving and kind. But he put it to me in a way that I could understand. You know? He didn't sugarcoat it, but he definitely got the message across to me. And like I said, this is an action program. So on a daily basis, I had to continue to look at the way I was acting. I had to continue to look at the way I was living and how I was treating people and how if I was working, bringing the principles into living these principles on a daily basis. You know, I mean, anybody can act good for an hour in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. It's what you do outside the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting is where the real meat and potatoes of it is. You know, what are you doing at work? What are you doing in the car? What are you doing, you know, on your way to the convenience store? You know, how are you treating the people in your life when your peers in Alcoholics Anonymous aren't watching? You know, it's integrity. What are you doing when no one's looking? You know, things needed to change. I needed to change. And the only way that was able to happen is with action. Like I said, it's an action program. Continue to look at myself. Continue to get kicked in the teeth by my sponsor, you know, on a daily basis. Him teaching me how to live again. Him teaching me how to navigate this world sober. I got no idea how to navigate this world sober. I got no tool. What I brought you wasn't much at all. What I brought my sponsor in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous was just I don't know how to explain it. There are no words. And what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me, just by a little bit of willingness on my part and just going along, showing up for service before the meeting, showing up for, you know, helping after the meeting pick up chairs, showing up to the events, going and doing things. It's an action program. What I put into it is exactly what I got out of it. And when it came time to do my 9-step, I was ready. And when it came time to go back to these people I had harmed, I could go to them. My sponsor says it a lot better than I do. But I could go to them with a clear conscience. And I didn't want to go in there to say I'm sorry. He knows I'm sorry, you know, or that person knew I was a sorry person. I was going to tell them that I was wrong. And I was willing to do whatever I could to help make that relationship right. And be perfectly willing to accept whatever was thrown back at me. I remember I called a guy every month for almost a year to try and get him to call me back to see if he'd have coffee with me so I could ask to try and make amends with him. I had given up. You know, my sponsor said, well, Nate, just leave him alone. You know, you might not ever be able to make that right. And one day he called me up. And he said, Nate, why don't you come on down and we'll have coffee. I was scared, you know. This guy was a good friend of mine. I hurt him really bad. I did some really gnarly things. And when I went and knocked on his door, and he invited me in. He asked me to sit down at his kitchen table. And I was so nervous. I had this prepared speech. I was going to tell him, you know, I'm wrong, Ozzy. I'm asking you to let me know what I can do to make it right. And all, you know what he said? I couldn't even say a word. He just said, so are we good? We good now? And I was like, yes, sir. We are good. And we are, it's amazing. It's just amazing what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous can do if you're willing to take a few simple actions. And trust, jump, and the net will appear. And came time to make amends to my little brother. How do you do that? How do you make amends to somebody who's not around anymore? Better yet, how do you make amends to his mother and father, his brother and sister? How do you do that? I got no idea. The only way I learned how to do it was working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and being willing and humble enough to going to another man who had shared a similar experience and asking him how he did it. And then yet further, being willing and humble enough to taking the action and looking at what had happened and taking an honest appraisal to my part in that situation, and being willing to allow to admit my part in that situation, and asking God to take it. And then after I'd done that, I wrote a letter. I wrote a letter to my little brother. I wrote a letter, and in that letter I wrote him, I told him all the things that I had done, all the good things that I had done. And I told him that I was, how much I missed him and how much I loved him, and how I was trying to do whatever I could to become the man that I thought that he would want me to be. And when I was done with that letter, I took it to my sponsor and I read it to him. And I folded it up, I put it in an envelope, and I put a stamp on it, and I put it to wherever heaven is. And I put it in the mailbox, mailed that letter. Where it ended up, I'm not sure. But it was the action. I held on to that letter for a little while. And I was with my friends. That's the other thing. Friends, people in alcohol, my brothers in Alcoholics Anonymous, who constantly expect more from me than I want for myself. My sponsor, who constantly demands more than me than I will ever allow myself to have. It's an action program. You've got to allow somebody else to take the reins. Because I can guarantee you, without my friends and without my sponsor and without allowing somebody else to work in my life, none of this would have happened. The freedom that came the day that I put that letter in the mail, there's no words. They're not words. It allowed me to go one step further to make amends to my family for what I had done. There was a storm cloud that had settled over the Corbin family home after my little brother's death. We are a family of love. The Corbin family is a tight, tight, loving family who has stuck by each other's side through thick and thin. And for 10 years, my mom, my dad, my brother and sisters did whatever they could to protect me from this juggernaut, this terrible thing that had happened in 2003. And it was affecting them. But they loved me so much that they didn't want me to be affected by their pain either. And so I went to this guy, this very same guy, and who had a similar experience as me. And I asked him what he did. And he asked me if I'd go and visit my little brother's gravesite. We hadn't buried my little brother. We had him cremated, and he was in a nice little box. And he said, "Well, Nate, you got to spread his ashes with your family." I said, "Well, I don't think you understand. I don't think you understand going and talking to my family about it. We just don't talk about it." He said, "Well, I don't care." He said, "I don't care what it feels like. I don't care how scared you are. You just need to do this. You don't know how badly you need to do this, Nate." And so I said, "I'm mad at you. I don't want to talk to you for a long time." That's what I said in my head. But I politely nodded and said, "Okay." As it says in a book, we give a polite nod. And for about 2 weeks, I thought about it. But I had experienced some of the promises that come in the ninth step, the promises of the ninth step, from doing other amends. And I wanted it so bad. I had this inside of me like none of the other amends that I had attempted to make in the past. I had this drive inside me to go before my family and sit them down and ask them if we could set my little brother free. And so I started making phone calls. So I called the right people. I called my sister and I called my mother because I knew they would tell everybody. And so that took care of three other phone calls. And sure enough, we set it up. And we sat down in my brother's living room, and we had the conversation that had needed to happen for 10 long years. And after that conversation, I mean, there was things said in that conversation that had needed to be said for a long time. Nothing bad. It was all love. That room was filled with a constant love that can only be experienced from a program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was the presence of God. And only that came from trusting and jumping, and the net appeared, sure enough. And we left there with the decision that I was going to weed eat a path back into the back 40 of our property, and we were going to get together and we were going to spread his ashes in the back. For two reasons. It was to set my little brother free, and also to have a place for us to go visit him, hang out with him, take some flowers, trucks, whatever. And we did that, and my mom and my dad were the only ones that were able to come. And when we did it, when I, you know, spread his ashes in that little place, another milestone that there's no way, there's not words to describe that scene, that it happened. But without rigorous action, without trust, without faith, that no matter what, everything was going to be okay, that scene would have never had happened. And that is not me. That is not Nathan Corbin. That is God. That is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous working in my life on a daily basis. That is a loving, caring, constant God showing up in my life on a daily basis. And I choose to call him God. You guys can call him whatever you want. But thank God, right? So after that, you know, some wild things have happened. I'm not perfect. I screw up daily. I don't stand up here, you know, a perfect specimen. This is a constantly learning new things about myself in 10 and 11. Constantly looking at all the people I harmed during the day. Constantly looking at the times I lost my patience and stepped away from God. Constantly going to my sponsor. Or sometimes I don't call him for a couple days and I get the rewards from that. you know, especially the one where you call him. So where you been? Oh, I've been here. Well, you haven't called me. That's always a fun conversation. But thank God for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is an action program. I can't emphasize that enough. You know, it's just it's a leap of faith. And I tell you, like I said, the person that's standing in front of you today is a direct result of working at 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and a loving, caring higher power. I'd like to thank you all for your time. And hopefully we'll see you again. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank Nathan very much for coming down and sharing his experience, strength, and hope with us. At this point, we're going to pass the 7th Tradition baskets. There's some people at the back with the baskets coming round. The 7th Tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the 7th Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. The Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Thank you. Newcomers, is there anyone here in the first 30 days of sobriety we'd like to welcome you? Yes. Hi, Mike. Welcome. Hi, Anita. Welcome.
I'm Roxy. I'm
not home. Hi, Roxy. Welcome. Anybody else? Yep. Hi, Mike. Welcome. Is that it? Did I miss anyone? Okay, thank you. I'd like to point out that literature is available. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. It's on that table over there. We also have a website. It's simpleactions.net. And tonight's talk and all the talks from the meetings that we do are available for free. You can listen to them on the website. It's simpleactions.net. It's over there, the web address on the table. Sponsorship. And AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. And in closing, we'd like to thank everybody for coming tonight. And once again, let's thank the speaker. Thank you. And for those that would care to join us, we're going to close the meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Thank you. Good. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Glad you're here, man. That's where you start.